Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday morning. It's November 12th. Currently 42 degrees here in Old Town Park City under mostly cloudy skies. We've got 40 degrees now in the Heber Valley. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Wednesday forecast for the Wasatch Back. Look for areas of cloud cover to stream across the sky as we go throughout today. So not as much sunshine, although we'll still have a few peaks, but definitely more clouds than sunshine today. High temperatures will still warm to around 60 degrees for us in Park City. We'll see those highs climbing into the mid-60s for the Heber Valley. Now, as we go into tonight, we'll see those skies clearing back out once again. That'll allow for temperatures to dip back down into the 30s for us along the Wasatch Back. High temperatures as we move throughout your Thursday, we'll call for highs around 60 in Park City and highs back in the mid-60s for the Heber Valley. We're expecting lots of sunshine to return with a few high clouds as we go throughout the day on your Thursday. Now, those clouds will thicken up Thursday night. Temperatures will actually stay in the upper 30s to low 40s heading into Friday morning. And as we go throughout your Friday, we're going to be tracking a front that's going to move through. But now, it looks like that front is basically going to be falling apart or splitting apart as it moves across the area. So we will have a chance of some scattered showers building in with that front as we go throughout your Friday, but don't expect a washout. Don't expect a ton of rainfall with that system, as most of the energy will go to our north and to our south. But still, a little unsettled weather for us as we get into your Friday. Now, as we go into your weekend, that storm system will start to prime the atmosphere for a more active weather pattern for us. So the weekend starts off okay with partly cloudy skies on your Saturday with maybe a few morning showers possible. Same story for us here as we go into out your the Heber Valley. And then as we get into the afternoon hours, highs will be in the mid-50s in Park City. Highs will be in the upper 50s for us in the Heber Valley. Now, Saturday night into Sunday, a stronger part of that storm system starts to come in from the south, and that now looks to bring in the better chance of widespread rain across the area as we go into your Sunday, especially by Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening. And it looks like we're going to stay unsettled with off and on rain and, yes, snow chances in the forecast as we get into next week for your Monday into Tuesday as we get colder with those temperatures. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
This weather report is brought to you in part by ABC4 Utah, ABC4.com, and Deer Valley Resorts, DeerValley.com.
Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:08 on this Wednesday morning. Stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour, I'll be checking in with Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang. Later on, Utah Outliers Head of Hockey Operations Kevin McCloskey is joined by Team Captain Jesse Ivanovic. They have details on the opening game and their new training rink. Park City Transportation Director Tim Sanderson in with details on new technology being rolled out with Park City Transit and the winter bus route changes. And finally, from the Heber Valley Chamber, Executive Director Dallin Kosher joining us. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today's guests include Sarah Cookler of USA Ski-Mo talking about their first ever North American Ski-Mo World Cup happening at Solitude. Then Dr. Trevor Cates and Renee Wang of Wild Women Tribe discuss their Elemental Harmony Group for women's seasonal health and wellness for the changing seasons. All of that coming up on today's edition of The Mountain Life, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10. On the phone now with an update from Park City Film, I have Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so let's start with tomorrow's special screening, Eternal Descent. What's this about?
Well, we got a packed screening coming up. As you mentioned, we are partnering with Park City Local and gold medal Olympian Sage Kotzenberg on his new snowboard film, Eternal Descent. There'll also be a couple of other short films, Cease and Desist from Beyond Medals, and Bora Zazu, about three-time Olympic medalist, Ayamu Hirano. Tickets are $10 and they are almost sold out. It has been amazing. The Park City love has just come out in full force for Sage, which is awesome. So if you do want to come see that those films, please go to parkcityfilm.org. Get them now while they're still available, because I guarantee you that will be a sold out show tomorrow. So pretty excited about that.
Okay, so tickets are required.
Yes, tickets are required to that. We'll have beer and wine available for purchase. And then we're kind of rolling into a very busy season as we are just kind of taking the opportunity to program events for locals during the off season. It's been great to see people coming out to the movies, and want to give a big shout out to everyone that, you know, donated for Live PC, Give PC across the board. I think the community felt the love. We certainly did. So thanks to everyone for that. You help it all keep going and keep us all in business. So appreciate that. So we have a selection of film festival favorites, everything from Sundance to Toronto and beyond coming up. This weekend, we have a Sundance standout. It's called Train Dreams with Joel Edgerton. And he's a logger and railroad worker in the Pacific Northwest at the turn of the century. And the film is really a moving meditation about our connection to the natural world and all those small moments that make up a life. I mean, it is stunningly beautiful. It was one of my favorite films of the festival, honestly. It just takes your breath away. Then the following weekend, we are partnering with the Kimball Arts Center to screen the documentary Paint Me a Road Out of Here. This is a film about artist Faith Ringgold's 1971 painting for the Women's House that she created for the women who were incarcerated at Rikers Island, a prison in New York, for those who don't know. And it's also about artist rapper Mary Enoch Elizabeth Baxter, who's carrying on Ringgold's legacy and her fight to liberate Black women from mass incarceration. We are thrilled that Mary Enoch Elizabeth Baxter will be here in Park City on November 22nd, Saturday, for the post-film discussion with Aldi Milliken from the Kimball Arts Center. You can also see some of her work at the Kimball's current exhibit, Gaze Into These Eyes. So great partnership there. Then our film for Thanksgiving weekend is Blue Moon with Ethan Hawke. And this is about lyricist Lorenz Hart, who's famous for writing Blue Moon, of course, and My Funny Valentine. And he's kind of at the end of his career, and he watches his writing partner embark on a new partnership, forming, of course, the very famous Rodgers and Hammerstein and the release of the musical Oklahoma. And then we'll be opening up December with an ode to the boss, Bruce Springsteen, with the biopic Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, starring Jeremy Allen White and Jeremy Strong. And this is about the making of Springsteen's acoustic album, Nebraska. And I love Bruce Springsteen. I am not a super fan. I loved this film. So please come out and see it. It is fantastic. It will definitely have you tapping your toes and dancing in the aisles on that one. And then we have a lot of special screenings coming up that we want to highlight as well. Next week, we are back with Librarians on Wednesday, November 19th. And this is a documentary that premiered at Sundance. It's about the coordinated efforts to ban books around the United States and the librarians who are fighting back. We're having a post-film discussion with Rebecca Cummings. She's the co-founder of Let Utah Read. Heidi Matthews, Park City School District Library Media Teacher. Tom Ford from the ACLU of Utah. And our very own Leslie Thatcher here will moderate the conversation. And we are presenting this in partnership with the Summit County Library. So please come out for that. And then November 20th, the next day, Thursday, we continue our Robert Redford tribute series with All the President's Men, starring Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman as the Washington Post journalists Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, who uncovered the Watergate scandal and took down the Nixon administration. Want a big shout out to Jackie and Gregory Zahner Foundation for helping us bring together the Robert Redford tribute series. We will have one more on that series, A River Runs Through It, in December, so stay tuned for that. But it's been a great way to celebrate his legacy here in the community. And then finally, last but not least, this year's selections of films from the Mountain Film Festival in Telluride will be on December 4th, a Thursday. And this year's Indomitable Spirit collection of short films touch on mortality, art, neurospiciness, and kindness. It is an absolutely fantastic selection. So lots to look forward to in the coming weeks.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I just want to thank our donors, sponsors, and members for making all this possible. Invite our film-loving community to join us as members if they'd like before the end of the year. It helps us keep going for 2026. ParkCityFilm.org for more details and tickets, of course. And again, it's Sage Kostenberg's film, Eternal Descent, is almost sold out. So get your tickets if you want to support Sage. But lots more films to come up. So we hope to see you early and often, as they say.
All right. So punch cards don't work for tomorrow's film.
They do.
Okay.
Yep. We'll take punch cards and passes. We want to make sure that these films are accessible to folks around the community. And we know people get those different passes in different ways, either by volunteering or, making purchases in advance to help us with revenue. So we definitely want to support that as well.
Okay. And with the Robert Redford tribute, people can get tickets for this as well, even though it's a free screening.
Correct. And for the librarians as well. Librarians and All the President's Men are free screenings, but if you'd like to register in advance, we've probably sold 150 or given away 150. So, we just like to make sure that if we get to, if we're starting to cross that 400 threshold, that we are making sure that everyone has a seat and people aren't showing up and getting turned away unnecessarily. So okay. It's always good to see who's coming.
Well, it was great.
But it's not required, absolutely.
All right. Can
show up if you have a change of plans.
Great to see the Sting. And actually, it was a pretty good house. that
It was packed. We had over 300 people. I mean, it was so amazing to see Robert Redford and Paul Newman just on the screen, kind of at the height of their, I don't know, just they're kind of coming into their own, and they're just so fantastic together. Their chemistry is amazing. But equally with Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford, it's also just really fun to see them together.
Yeah. Okay, Katie, thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Katie Wang is the executive director of Park City Film. You're listening to the local news hour here on KPCW News Time 817. Well, Summit County has announced a deal to resolve a dispute in the Camas area over the road to the gun club in a Wasatch County neighborhood. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports the compromise is to shift the road north.
The Summit County Council may vote on a deal Wednesday with Wasatch County and the developer of Wakara across the county line. It's to resolve a years-long dispute over construction traffic. Residents along West 200 South, the Gun Club Road, have complained of large trucks traveling at high speeds, kicking up clouds of dust. Some are headed to the Wakara subdivision across the county line, but the developer also says the bulk were for the final phase of Tuhay. Both are private gated developments. Tuhay isn't letting Wakara use its entrance off of State Route 248, so the proposed compromise is reorienting the Gun Club Road at Wakara's expense.
They are agreeing to go from the Gun Club north through the parcel there that is actually part of the Your Ranch, and to pave a road and a trail to directly to 248. So we believe this would keep the Camas side, the 200 South side, rural.
That's Summit County Manager Shane Scott. The dirt part of the road that traverses the Your Ranch would be restored, according to a county staff report, meaning the parcels north and south would become contiguous open space. The Camas Valley Lions Gun Club would be accessed via the new turnoff farther up the hill on 248. Summit County would bill Wakara and its future homeowners association for the cost of maintaining the new road, which would be paved. Wasatch County would also need to approve the deal. The county has been working to purchase the 834-acre Your Ranch for $25 million over the past 2 years. Staff say they've secured over $9 million in state and federal grants so far. Under the proposed road deal, Scott says the dirt path would tee into the newly contiguous ranch land.
There would be a lot of opportunities with the abandonment of that road to create more of a recreation in that entire parcel, both on the north side and the south side.
The county says it plans to put the Your Ranch under a permanent conservation easement once it finalizes the purchase. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, Park City High School students helped honor local service members placing flags and flowers on the graves this Veterans Day. KPCW's Christine Weller shares what moved the students to get involved.
High school students from Park City's chapter of the Young Men's Service League and the Park City American Legion Post 14 marked local military graves Friday ahead of the holiday honoring those who have served their country. Originally Armistice Day, Americans first observed the holiday November 11, 1919 to memorialize the end of World War I. YMSL member and Park City High sophomore Hudson Phillip helped decorate service members' graves in the Park City and Glenwood cemeteries with red carnations and American flags. It's part of the National Flags and Flowers Challenge started in 2015.
We basically did this to honor the veterans that have served for our country and still are currently serving.
They placed mementos for more than 170 veterans across the two cemeteries. It was the first time flags and flowers adorned Glenwood graves as part of the national movement. Phillips said the experience made him feel connected to the veterans.
They're the reason why we are a free country, and it feels good when you are honoring people that are giving up their life for you.
The Service League will clear the graves after Veterans Day and return in December with American Legion Post 14 to honor service members during a Wreaths Across America ceremony. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, Park City Transit upgrading its technology to improve real-time bus tracking and communication. In the studio with details, I have Park City Transportation Director Tim Sanderson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So we have done this before, and we're going to do away with the MyStop app. What's replacing it?
Probably about a year ago, we introduced the Transit app, which is non-proprietary. Transit's its own separate company, and they provide real-time information for a number of different cities, including Salt Lake City, High Valley Transit you can use with it. So we started introducing that, and we started turning towards that as our advertising for our app. just for a number of reasons. Again, we're not in the app business. We're in the moving people business. And it's much easier to have somebody on the outside do it. Also, for tourists who may use transit in their home market, they're already familiar with the app. They don't have to download something new and all those kinds of things. So that's part of the reason we're changing.
Okay. Well, I really like my stop app because it was like I could push my stop and then see all of the buses that were going to be coming through in the next, you know, hour or so.
Yes.
This doesn't work the same way like that. I mean, when you pull it up, you can see the buses and where they're going to be in a certain amount of time. So I know that I have to, if I'm going to jump on that teal bus, I know I need to be down in the Old Town Transit Center in 13 minutes, according to my app right now.
That's right. And transit operates much the same way. You can program in your favorite stops. So, for example, I have OTTC and then by my house. And it will give you basically the same things. If you're programming in a route, it will only give you the buses that will follow that route. But for example, if you were going from Old Town Transit Center to the library, it will give you all of the options that will go to those two stops, not just necessarily the next bus.
Okay. Again, when I pull this up, though, it's so confusing to me. When I look at the green line, it shows Main Street, Park Meadows, Thames, 22 minutes. Then it says Park Meadows, Thames, 24 minutes. What is it? I mean, how do I know when it's going to be there?
Again, without looking at the app, it's hard for me to diagnose it, you know, just off the top of my head. But normally what you would do is you would... So basically what this is just showing, this is showing all the buses that that will go by the stop at this, I'm not sure what screen you're on here.
Oh, Old Town Transit Center, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, this just shows you the closest stop to where you currently are right now, rather than the stop that you have programmed in. If you program the stop in, then it'll show you the times for that stop.
Okay, so I better spend some more time programming stops.
I think one of the things that we're going to do, because we do understand that this has changed for people, is working on a bit of a tutorial in order to help people. And we've been working with transit in order to do that, because, again, they're in every large center. I think the biggest challenge is our introduction to it was done a certain way, which is different from how the rest of the industry necessarily does it.
Okay, but the fact that we've got so many other entities, High Valley Transit, Salt Lake City, it really is a coordinated effort here.
Not necessarily. It's transit. Transit just does it all for all of these systems. So they pull in all the data independently, and then they push it outwards. So even if a transit system doesn't cooperate with them, normally their data is still publicly available, just like ours is. Just like you can use Google if you want, or Apple Maps, or any of these other ones. We just created this relationship with transit because they're the most widely used one.
Okay, so this is happening soon, huh?
Starting tomorrow. We've been very successful at the installation. This is obviously a really intense and disruptive thing for us, because it really is our whole entire backbone of our system. But it's been going very well, and we flipped the switch starting tomorrow morning.
Okay. So go ahead and delete my stop.
you can keep it for posterity's sake if you so wish.
Tell me a little bit more about this, because this is one of my frustrations on the bus, and it specifically is when I'm at Deer Valley. Get on a bus that I think is going to take me home, and it then brings me to the Old Town Transit Center, which most buses go from Deer Valley, and then it changes from red to blue. But when I get on the bus at Deer Valley, it was a red bus. So how do I know what bus I'm getting on, or what it's going to change to?
We do have some challenges, and we're working through that. One of the things this year, we're not doing any substantial changes because, again, a lot of that stuff is very disruptive, especially for people who catch the same bus at the same time. We start changing some of those things, and it can adversely affect. So we want to be very careful and very methodical when we do it. But we do have many challenges like that. We call it interlining. And it's in some cases it's a more efficient way of running the buses, so we can get really more miles out of a single bus. And it so saves generally on, we call it layover time, the recovery time at the end of the line on some of these routes, because the routes take different amounts of time in order to finish their cycles. And then when they, but you can't always run them at the same frequency if they're different routes. So for example, the route doesn't take 20 minutes to run, it might take 25 minutes to run, but you want to run a bus every 20 minutes, then you need to start getting into interlining and those kinds of things. That being said, there's a number of improvements that we can do, and we're really looking at starting to do that for not this season, but the following season.
Okay, so when I get on the bus, I don't even know, should I talk to the driver first to make sure that the bus isn't changing, bus line?
So generally speaking, what happens at Deer Valley is that the bus is coming in as a red bus, and then it goes out as a blue bus, for example. And so when you're standing there looking at the bus, the sign says red, but when you get on the bus, the sign and the bus is stopped and it changes to blue. Again, not a good system. This technology upgrade that we're doing now will help with that as well. May not be on day one, but with more accurate GPS and just a better ability in the back office, we can fix that.
Great.
Just so that it rolls over when it's coming up Deer Valley Drive rather than right at the stop.
Okay. Let's see. You were telling me you don't think there'll be any route changes this season, or do you have a few?
The only route changes that we're planning on is we're doing a modification on the 2010 so that it'll provide service up Airy Drive now. So not necessarily a change in the route, just really an addition. That was a request that we had quite consistently throughout the community. And then the other one is we're just modifying a little bit of the schedules with the orange and the buses coming in from Deer Valley to assist with employees getting up to Stein Erickson and those areas up there. So,
okay, so tell me the Airy Drive. It's going up Airy Drive?
It's going up Airy Drive and coming down Mill Mountain.
Okay.
So.
And, I mean, it'll just lap there, or it just brings people to the Old Town Transit Center?
Either way, you can either, if you catch it going one way, you'll go to Old Town Transit Center. You catch it going the other way, you'll go to Deer Valley. So you've got your choice. And again, it's the 2010, so it'll go on to Park City Mountain or the Mark. It goes a little bit everywhere in the community. So.
Oh, I don't even know. What's it, if that's the number, 2010?
2010. Yeah, it's a 20, and then the color is 10.
I know, 10.
It sounds like 20.
Okay,
that sounds like 2010 all the time, especially with my accent.
Yeah, and I'm a color fan. I think the numbers are confusing, but yeah. So you're going to keep the colors?
Yeah, we're going to keep the colors for now. Yes, they work well for tourists that don't know the area.
All right. So this tan bus also used to go make its way up to American Flag. Is that going to continue?
Still does. Yeah. This is just an extension on the route. And similar to Park Meadows, we're not putting up bus stops or anything like that. It's just a flag down service in that area. So you see, it'll be a smaller bus. If you see the bus, you want to catch it, just flag it down. It'll be on the transit app. So you can tell what time it's coming and all those kinds of things. So, again, it was very popular when we introduced it last year, and we're hoping that it'll be equally as popular when it goes to Barrie.
All right, you weren't here, but the reason that High Valley, one of the reasons started was because Park City wanted to kind of pull away and just focus on the city limits. Do we have transit service now to all areas in town?
It depends what you consider transit service. The Federal Transit Administration considers the walk shed to be 3/4 of a mile from all bus routes. That's great if you live in the prairies, in the mountains, that's a little bit different. So we generally consider about 1/4 mile, 1/2 mile would be coverage. And we're probably about 90-95% of the community now with the 2010. We got that big section of American Saddler, and now we've got Airy. Queen Esther area up in there, we're probably never going to get service in there. It's just with the way the roads are connected and everything, it's too difficult to get a bus up in there. If you live in any other area of town, then you're going to have convenient transit access.
Great. Any plans to bring back some sort of micro transit, or you don't think it's necessary with the coverage you've got?
No, we don't. I think micro transit works well for certain areas, for more suburban areas where you don't have quite as much density, and it's more difficult to create a fixed route through there. Fixed routes, people generally prefer them because you don't have to take any action. You can just go out and stand at the bus stop and you're consistent. You know what time you're going to get on the bus, and generally you know what time you're going to get off. So a lot of those unknowns are done. So if we have the opportunity to put a fixed route in, really for the same cost or less than micro transit, then we'll usually fall back on that.
Okay, and then the buses that come out of Richardson Flat,
yes.
Does the frequency increase starting, what, when the resorts open?
Yeah, when the first week, I don't know the exact date off the top of my head, but first week of December is when we roll up, and everything gains frequency at that point in time.
Okay. And then what's the latest with the Queens Junction Park and Ride? Or, I mean, we had looked at maybe a park and ride at the Gordo property, or there was still the one that UDOT had presented. I think that's off the table at this point. But.
So the last direction that we've received from council on it is to pursue the option of two possible locations, one at Gordo and continuing the one at Richardson Flat. And generally I think what we think of that is that the main park and ride would be at Gordo, and then for peak days, we would open up Richardson Flat and start operating at that point in time. That's kind of where we are theoretically now, but a lot of it's going to depend on the Recreate 248 study, because that's the line that we'll be using the park and ride the most. So we're kind of putting those two things together at that point.
Okay, so people who do ride the bus, if they haven't already, make sure that you download the new transit app. It's kind of a green background with an S turned to its side.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Leslie.
Tim, anything else that you wanted to mention?
No. I'm looking forward to seeing all your listeners on the bus and saying hi to them.
And I'm sorry, I just got a text from somebody wanting to know what transit solutions have been looked at for Kearns and Bonanza, if at all.
Again, that's going to be part of the Recreate 248 study. That's that intersection will be served by the solution on there.
Okay. Thanks so much, Tim. Yeah,
thank you.
Tim Sanderson is Park City Municipal Transportation Director. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, the Utah Outliers is a U-20 Tier 2 junior hockey team based here in Park City. It was founded back in 2016. In the studio now to tell us more, as well as about their new training facility, I have Kevin McCloskey, the team's head of operations, and team captain Jesse Ivanovic. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Leslie.
Leslie, thanks for having us.
All right. So maybe, Kevin, you start and tell us a little bit about the team. The team's been around 9 years. Is this for anybody or just the elite hockey players?
Oh, no. This is we've got kids from Sweden. Jesse's from British Columbia. We've got Americans, Canadians. We had a kid coming in today from, where's he coming from?
Not from Utah.
Yeah. No. Anyway. So these kids will come here. Like, Jesse's an age-out player. He's a 2005 birth year. He's turning 20, captain of the team, returning player. And we'll help Jesse next year. He'll end up playing NCAA D3 hockey, maybe back in Canada. But this will lead to a really nice academic athletic opportunity for him.
Yeah, so what brought you to Park City, Jesse?
I'm going to be honest. I came from Saskatchewan, BC, and I kind of wanted to come down and get the opportunity to play college hockey down here in the state. So I thought coming to Utah would probably be the best bet and kind of express myself down here. So that's kind of what I was thinking.
Get out of the cold, too.
Yeah.
So how did you find out about this team?
Actually, it was through my agent, Thomas. He had reached out to Paul, our head coach there, and he was like, tell me the whole rundown of the program. And he was like, come on down. I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to play. Win an organization. So that's always a good thing.
Okay. So you've been living on your own probably the last couple of years once you turned 18. But what did you do before that?
Before that, I was at OHA, which is a hockey academy in Penticton. And then before that, I was in Nanaimo, where I also was with the Billet family. So since I've been 16, I've kind of been in and out of houses and then in the summers with my parents. So.
Okay. Well, tell me about this Billet program. It's really a host family, right?
Yeah. Correct.
host family, Billet family, it's super good. It's almost like you're home away from home. So they're cooking you dinners, you're hanging out with their kids, watching movies. So it's a really good thing, I think, especially for people who kind of get homesick. It's really good for those parents and stuff to include them in everything, and everyone has a great time.
Yeah, so how do you find these host families?
By word of mouth. Our Billet coordinator, Bill McLeod's done a great job, and we've got some of the local Park City Ice Miner youth moms and dads are also kicking in now. And it's just by word of mouth, and like Jesse said, you know, there can be some really great experiences. Head coach Paul Taylor, he's still in touch with his Billet family from 1993. Like 30 years, seriously. It's just amazing some of the experiences that you can have. So we're very blessed in the families that have stepped up. We're always looking for more, you know, and we feel once we get going here with our home schedule on the 21st, next Friday, then we'll have more of the youth parents will maybe jump in and want to experience what Jesse was just talking about.
Okay, so what's involved in being a host family? I mean, do you receive any kind of stipend or anything?
Yeah, $475 a month is the stipend. And, you know, we're just looking for loving homes that, you know, it's like adding an older brother for some of the younger hockey players. And like Jesse and others who live with the youth kids, a lot of times they'll go onto their practice ice and help their coaches and push pucks. And so if you really look at it, when you've got an 8, 9, 10-year-old, these guys really become their NHL guys. Because they're close, they're accessible, they're hanging out, they're high-fiving. You really can't get that at a mammoth game in downtown Salt Lake. You're so isolated from the players. Here, we're very, very accessible.
Okay. So in terms of the outliers, I mean, how good of a team are you? I mean, is it a very competitive?
Oh, it's terrific, yeah. You know, like, you know, we have two kids from our team last year playing in major junior hockey in Canada, which is better than us. Step up from us, and we have, I don't know, what do we have, Jesse? 7 kids last year going to college this year.
Yep.
So good athletic academic opportunities. And we work very hard, Paul and assistant coach Richard Boham, myself, we work, you know, diligently to find these kids good matches with colleges.
Okay.
And hockey, too. That's a big part of it.
Do they usually make that jump, or do they go to college first before the NHL?
Well, our kids typically will not go to the NHL. It's just gotten to be such a young game now. So, you know, they're drafting 08 kids this year, 2008 kids this year in the NHL. Like that, they're really young. But listen, that doesn't mean kids' career's over. They can have a great experience here in not only our team, but our division and our league. And then they move on to college and they get, you know, great athletic, academic opportunities there. And you know where it leads to. Like some of my best friends still are when I played in the 70s with them.
Yeah.
Like, it's a long time.
Yeah. So what are some of the colleges that have good hockey teams? Or, I mean, what would be an aspiration for you?
Where do you want to go, Jesse?
Anywhere that has the best opportunity. You want to go somewhere where the coach and organization wants you. I think that's always the best thing because they're going to give you the most opportunities. So for me, like going to a college, playing there 4 years, getting a degree, and then possibly going playing overseas in Europe, I think that would probably be the best way to live out my hockey experience. I think that, for me, would be awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like you have a new hockey rink. Where have you been playing?
West Valley, the Acord, which is a county facility down in the Acord, and Rich Walper had this dream a lot of years ago. The hotel's been open for 3.5 years now, Black Rock Mountain Resort. The arena is built attached to it. And it's by far and away the nicest facility in our division. Although Idaho Falls has a nice building, but this is a very unique building attached to a hotel. It's less seats, but I mean, our locker room is terrific. And you know, Rich, the leadership has really done a great job. And I've had a lot to do with the hockey part of it. Locker rooms and benches and scoreboards and all that, but it's a really nice facility. It'd be a great fan, family-friendly fan experience when you come see the Outliers play.
Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that, but so do you pay rent or something to access all of this? Or well, are they a sponsor of the Outliers?
No, the Outliers are a tenant in the building, but you know, Rich owns the Outliers and the building, so it's all under one roof.
Nice,
so,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. And at one point, I think we had heard there was going to be 2 or 3 rinks. Just the one? Is that what we've got?
Yeah. Way back when, it talked about 2 and then an outdoor rink, and there wasn't enough room. So we really condensed it. It'll be a venue that will expect 12 to 15 concerts a year. We'll be up 3,000 people for concerts. We'll do a lot of corporate work in there with attached to the hotel. We can do dinners up to 800 people on the floor. Like, we have a floor covering. We can do dinners up to 800 seated, which is the largest in Summit County. So, you know, we'll work with a lot of the hotels around, and, you know, if they can't accommodate, and we have the ability to bring in musical acts for them and their corporate access as well.
Nice. So it is regulation rink, huh?
Oh, yeah, 200 by 85, just like you see at the Delta Center, and just a few less seats and a lot more closer to the action, access to the players.
But it even has suites in it.
Well, suites is a little bit, it's a bit of a misnomer. We have a really nice VIP area. Our tickets in that area will be $60. It will include all of your food. We have a full liquor license for a portion of it for those that like to indulge in adult beverages. And then we have beer and beer throughout the building as well. And then, of course, everybody's favorite Diet Coke, right? My wife especially.
Yeah. Okay. So have you played your first game there yet, or...?
So we will, we've had a soft opening, so we will open it up on the 21st and 22nd against the Pueblo Bulls from Southern Colorado, and really good program, and we're chasing them in the standings right now. We'll get a couple of wins next weekend.
Okay.
And we're, before that, we're in Rock Springs Friday night on the road.
So, and you are still playing. What's your position?
I'm a defenseman. So play the left or the right, whatever gets you the most ice time. That's what I figure.
Yeah. Is that where most of the fighting happens?
You can say.
Jesse had his first fight this year, early in the season.
Yeah, first fight in the down here, but yeah, in up north it was quite frequent.
Yeah, listen, we don't mind a little bit of dust up here and there, you know.
Well, that's what people love about hockey, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Talk to my wife, get her. She's a season ticket holder, and she doesn't mind the. She doesn't, as I call them, dust ups. You don't want to use the fight word too frequently now, but on occasion, not a lot of it, but we do have some.
All right. Well, tell me. I mean, because for me, I feel like I'm always, 10 seconds behind. How is it that you follow the puck? I mean, is that just that's what makes a great hockey player, right?
I think it has a lot to do with, like, reacting but also anticipating. Especially as a defenseman, you're always trying to be one step ahead of what you think the other team is going to do. But it is a lot of reacting at the end of the day. Like, you do not know what's going to happen for the most part because the puck can bounce off the wall in just different ways. And, yeah, it's a lot of reacting.
Huh. Okay. All right, so your first game is November 21st there at the new facility.
At the arena. Yep. Tickets on sale, utahoutliers.com. Reserve seating are $20. And as I say, the VIP seating, which includes all of your food and beverages, adult beverages are on a cash basis, but those are $60. There's not a bad seat in the house. The sight lines are fantastic. It's a very steep arena. And you're literally right on top of the action.
Okay. And the season extends. I mean, it's already started, in October? Is that?
Yeah, we started mid-September. 20th of September was our first game. Our last regular season game is March the 28th. And then top four teams in the division will make the playoffs, best of five series. We've won the division three consecutive years. We didn't win it the last two, but we make the playoffs every year, and we're always very, very competitive. And Jesse, the goal is to come back and roll the playoffs this year, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, good luck to you guys. Anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I'd just say at the end, listen, we're thrilled to be here in Park City. We've had some fantastic feedback from, JK and Nancy at Flanagan's and some of the other eating establishments and drinking establishments in town are very, very excited. So we're thrilled to be here in Park City. We mentioned about the tickets next Friday, a week from 9 days from now. Pueblo's in town Friday and Saturday. I would just say come out and experience it. It's going to be a really fun experience.
Okay, a lot closer to home too. All right.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and access to young kids like Jesse.
Sure. All right, Kevin McCloskey and Jesse Ivanovic. Again, good luck. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a great day.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:48. In the studio now with an update from the Heber Valley Chamber of Commerce, Executive Director Dallin Kosher. Good morning, Dallin.
Good morning.
Hey, taking a look back at summer, how did it go for you guys?
You know, summer was was great. I think a little bit of a mixed bag on some of the numbers, but other than that, I think it was great. So when I say mixed bag, we saw things like restaurant tax, and those things were climbing. Transit room tax, which is one of our key indicators of growth, was relatively stable. Like we saw a big jump in June, and then kind of leveling off in July and August. I had to remember what months were in the summer for some reason. And so I think that shows that we had a good summer, but pretty average. But what we're also seeing is demand for hotel rooms went up. So like we have more hotel rooms in Timber Valley now than we ever before with the East Village coming online, and we're seeing a similar occupancy rate of about 50%, but 50% of 1,000 is 500, 50% of 1,500 is 750. So we are seeing an overall increase of rooms into the Heber Valley, but with transit room tax remaining relatively stable.
Okay, which is how you are funded.
Yes, yeah. Which is how our office is funded. And so that kind of shows us a couple things. One, that I think the East Village is seeing some great pickup and is bringing more visitors to that area. So as maybe listeners will know, that the Grand Hyatt East Village area has a different taxing structure than other parts of the county. So we are seeing great increases or good increases there. And the county has seen some of those growth there, but some of those transient room dollars go to a different fund. So, but otherwise, did a pretty good summer.
Okay, so with the opening of Deer Valley East this winter, with all the new lifts and runs cut, how are you gearing up for that, if at all?
It's funny, as you were driving in, I was driving in looking at the ski slopes here, and like this is like the first time in my career here at Heber Valley where like being really astute to what's going on with the weather as far as winter coming, I'm like, has really been on my mind. I've obviously, we want a good winter for all of us. But when I started thinking about for skiing, and I'm like, oh, well, it's still pretty warm outside. So we're gearing up in the sense of wanting to make sure that our community is open and ready and welcoming. We had a few things that changed this winter. Maybe you've heard that the Ice Castle will not be back in Midway this year because due to some staffing and construction issues with trying to get enough people to work there. So that's an issue there. But I don't think we'll have a problem with people coming to Heber Valley and seeing plenty to do because of things like Midway is blowing up with some really cool features. So that's all to say that as winter's coming along, we'll have things for people to do after they come off the slopes from Deer Valley East Village and coming down in Heber Valley, get a meal, see some cool shops, have some entertainment, and enjoy the night.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about the workforce housing lottery. This was launched by Mountain Lions Community Housing, but you're kind of publicizing it.
Yeah, so they reached out to our office, and they sent it out to their mass emailing list saying, hey, let's get this out far and wide. And so we don't always have a lot of opportunities to talk about affordable workforce housing. So when this came through, I was like, let's see if we can help more people with this opportunity. So it's a lottery that they have a few homes in Heber Valley that they're trying to get people into, and you can sign up and then hope for the best, right? And it's unfortunate that it has to be a lottery system, but they're doing a lot of demand's really high and supply is really low, so you have to do something to help that out. So that is an email that I went out last week, and I believe that you have until Monday to sign up for that lottery to get all signed up for that. And their website escapes me off the top of my head right now, but
housinghelp.org.
Yeah, housinghelp.org. And that's the Mountainlands Community Housing Trust. So take a look at that.
These are rentals that they're...
They look like they're purchases. So they'll be purchased deed-restricted. So it was... the emails talked about how the housing was not quite set, but not to exceed $510,000. You're like, well... $510,000. Good.
Affordable, but not.
Yeah, right. All comparison, right? So, anyways, then they also have some brokerages in there that are helping with some zero down assistance. So, take a look at that email and get onto it.
Tell me a little bit about the economic development grants for small business assistant you've got going on.
Yeah. So this year in 2020, well, the fiscal year 2026, this last summer, we were applied for a grant from the through the Rural County Grant, through the Governor's Office of Economic Opportunity, this is $200,000 grant that we use for economic development purposes, things like running the, helping with supply funding for the economic summit that we do, some research data that we purchase. And then what we really wanted to do this year is to get money into the hands of our businesses. So we're doing some small micro grant loans, not loans, grants, that would be, help these businesses maybe clear the next hurdle. It's not designed to necessarily help you clear $1 million this next year, but to help you get over the next hurdle of either growth or expansion. So it's really designed to help you grow or expand your business in some way. So we're looking at grants up to $5,000, like I said. So it's not going to get you a brand new fleet vehicle or fleet of vehicles, but it may help you get to that next step. So we say it's, we'll cover up to 50% of the project cost, up to $5,000. So you have a $2,000 project, we'll cover up to 50%, or $1,000, up to $10,000, up to, you know, we'll cover 50%, up to $5,000.
Okay, so people can find out more online?
Yeah, so it hasn't quite launched yet. We'll look to do it in the first quarter of 2026, but I'm trying to get it out so people know when we do go out, get it out there, that it's not a surprise. Oh, what's going on? So it's, as you might say, a soft opening on this grant, but look forward to it. We have about between $90,000 and $100,000 to grant to other businesses, so that we're looking forward to doubling that through the matching of the businesses. So we look forward to this grant to help people get to that, past that next hurdle.
Okay. You've also looking at some initiatives for the 2026 redo of the Tourism Strategic Plan and Community Sentiment Survey. What's happening here?
Yeah, so a couple years ago in Durwell, during COVID, we got a grant through the state to do some strategic planning and destination development planning for our office. And wouldn't you know it, in the last 5 years, it was a 10-year plan, but wouldn't you know, in the last 5 years, the things changed so fast. So we need to re-look at that plan and see if we can adjust it. And some of the things are now either have happened faster than expected or no longer now obsolete. So we need to re-look at that and see what we can do to help our community. And then from a sentiment survey, we want to know how the visitor economy is affecting our locals. You know, we know that over-tourism and crowded slopes and events and places can be annoying for locals. So how can we help balance that visitor economy that we need to help sustain us and see what we can do to help the residents find a good, have a great experience in Heber Valley? Ideally, both these plans, and we also talk about like maybe doing an economic development strategic plan, is the idea of all these is to create a space for us residents that we really love and create a value that is good for us and it's great for our community. And then that in turn is beneficial for the our visiting economy. So it's all local first, but with a opportunity to be energized with visitation.
Okay. Looking at next week, you got
lots of stuff going on.
Yeah, lots of events. So why don't you run through those?
Yeah, so on November 18th, that's a Tuesday, a week from yesterday, we will be doing our chamber lunch. This is a networking event where we're also looking to gather some feedback for 2020 to implement to 2026. So come on down. We'll be at the UVU Wasatch campus. We'll have some networking conversation and also some, we'll be doing some Slido / you know, surveys, the interactive surveys to get feedback about, hey, what topics would you like to see for the next year, either in the lunches or the Wasatch Back Business University, things of that nature. And we want the businesses to talk to each other and share that feedback with us. And then on the 19th, we have our After Hours Mixer at the Hungry Bunny and Petrol Connection. These are from 4 to 6. These are just another opportunity for people to network, and more information about addresses and all that fun stuff is at HeberValleyChamber.com. And come on down to those two things for our chamber next week. And then finally on the 20th, the day my son turns 16, so kids, please stay off the road for a couple days, we're having a tourism roundtable that we do this quarterly or a couple times a year to just talk about, here's our upcoming marketing plan for the year, for the season, any challenges, any opportunities, and to really talk to those folks individually to see what we can do to work together and work with each other.
Okay.
So, busy week.
Yeah, sure is. Okay, well, and I'm going to give your son a little bit more credit than you do.
Yeah, that's right. He does great.
Good. Okay, I got to leave it there. Dallin, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Dallin Kosher is the executive director of the Heber Valley Chamber. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.